and welcome to Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith, a podcast about the bliss and burden that is unrequited love. My guest today is the legendary podcaster, writer, stand-up, actor, sort of, and taskmaster champion of champions, Richard Herring. Rich, hello.
Hello, yes. First time that's been said out loud.
Well, yeah.
Because
how
it's been
does
a
it
secret.
Feel?
It's been a secret for months because we recorded it in the studio in September, so well done to the studio audience for keeping shtum. But,
amazing, and you did a lot of self-deprecating stuff on Twitter that made it sound like you'd absolutely
Which I did
died.
For the series as well, so I don't know why people fell for it again. But I genuinely didn't think it was... I didn't think it was a fair... I said beforehand, if one episode doesn't decide anything, whoever wins, it's not...
Yeah.
It's nice to win, but it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't mean anything anyway, because it's Taskmaster.
No, it all means a lot. It means a lot to me, anyway.
Yeah, good.
So, Richard, anyone who knows anything about your work knows that you are obsessive. Is that fair to say?
I suppose so, yes.
Yeah. So, in terms of crushes, now, I already know this because you tell everyone everything, but your first crush was...
The blonde one from ABBA.
The blonde one from ABBA. And I like the fact that you call her that rather than giving her a name.
Agnetha, I think.
Yes, Agnetha.
Yeah, I was watching a documentary about them the other day and it brought it all back. Because I was pretty young. I mean, I was interested in comedy and sex from a very young age.
And they were very funny.
And ABBA. I didn't know what sex was, but I saw when I was about, and I've mentioned this before, but when I was about three or four, maybe four or five, I saw a couple of times an Open University programme about the Louis Buñuel surrealist film in Chien Andalou, I think it's called. And there was a bit in there where a man chases a woman around and then grabs her by the breast and then starts fondling her breast and then her blouse disappears through the magic of cinema. He's fondling her actual breast. And then there are ants all over his hand and he's got a hole in his hand. It's not the first... It shouldn't... And they cut a cow's eye open. It's not the kind of introduction to sex you should have. But I remembered thinking, wow, that's exciting.
Wow.
So I was interested in sex and Agnetha, as I'm sure she did to every single man of my generation and above, was absolutely fun, even though they're ridiculous in that Waterloo. I mean, so Waterloo, Eurovision Song Contest, which we, you know, everyone used to watch.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that this Eurovision Song Contest... It was the same day as the FA Cup, and I couldn't have imagined that as a kid because the FA Cup was one of those days where you're allowed to sit with bowls of crisps and sweets and eat them all day long. And then the Eurovision Song Contest was also that. So you'd have just had to be eating sweets for 24 hours. So to put them to be on the same day was insane. But it was, you know, she was very pretty.
How old were you then?
So it was 74, wasn't it? So I think I was 6 or 7.
Okay. Had you recovered from your introduction to sex?
I think I had. I think I probably...
Like, when you say it was an introduction to sex...
Yeah.
And you say it was exciting.
Yeah. I was really interested. I remember seeing also a programme about fertilisation and telling my mum and dad about how little tadpoles came. You know, I learnt the whole thing. And again, I was about 4 or 5, something like that. And I had a next door neighbour called Claire. How should I say
what her name? We can bleep.
She was called Claire, and we would, you know, we would play doctors and nurses with each other.
And what did that involve?
That enjoyed just showing each other our bits and working out what they were about. So, and I remember my sister said she once saw us doing it and thought we were about to. My sister's a bit older than me. Thought we were about to have sex. As you know, we must have been under 8 because I moved when I was 8, but I think we were sort of about 6. So it was quite an innocent interest in each other's bits, which I'm sure everyone again goes through. But I found it all fascinating and you know, I had those feelings. So I actually had crushes on people like, I think Agnetha was first, but I remember that similarly, with her, I wanted her to appear in my bedroom in just her pants, but I didn't know what I would do at that point or what I was expecting. And it's nice I kept her pants on.
Well, yes, I know. I mean, presumably, if you'd seen Claire's bits, you knew a bit about what was there. Because I was assuming the pants were kept on because you just didn't know.
Yeah, well, I would have known, I suppose. Yeah, I would have known, but maybe, I think as a young man, I was quite scared of what was in pants, even though I had seen
it. Yeah.
Even as an 18-year-old, I was, you know, I was, and I hadn't seen any more in real life. I was still scared of them, and I kind of liked the idea of breasts and things, but I didn't like the idea of well, I didn't. I was scared. I would not say I didn't like what was down there. I was just scared of whatever it was that was down there. So there was that. But then I remember like seeing like various adverts. They used to have these long adverts during the commercial breaks. I remember when you're home from school when you're ill. Then most of these things must have happened. I don't think I was particularly ill, but all of these things must have come from watching Open University and Crown Court and everything in the afternoon.
And not a lot of nudity.
But they had long adverts for musicians, like and one of whom was Barry Manilow, and I really he did something to me. Barry Manilow made me feel a bit funny in my tummy. And Nana Mouskouri, who is not like
she's not a sex pot, is she?
Not the sexiest woman, but there was something about Nana Mouskouri that got me going. I also like.
But when you say got you going, I mean, I don't want to get too graphic. But you're sort of saying it's exciting.
Yeah, I just felt confused and a bit butterfly-y, I think. Yeah, thrilled and not understanding why I felt that, but knowing I liked it when those adverts came on. And they weren't, those adverts were not at all. So, I mean, Barry Manilow is not a sort of antithesis of sex.
Yeah.
And so is Nana Mouskouri, really. So it's an interesting, safe choice, but there was something about them. I've always liked a big nose on a girl ever since then, so maybe that's where that started. But also I like the lead singer. I like Sweet. I was the first band I was into. And again, I was still in Loughborough then because that was when I first bought the records. And I remember buying the records at a jumble sale or something. So I was, again, under eight.
And who was it in Sweet?
It was Brian Connolly, not Brian...
Right.
Brian Connolly, not Brian Connolly.
Brian Connolly.
But you were
really scattering. I mean, that's not a type.
No, it's not a type. Well, it's a blonde. I suppose Brian and Agnetha are similar pop star blondes.
Yeah.
I wasn't mad into blondes. I don't think I have really got a type. I shot fairly wide in my different kinds of people. So there wasn't like someone I completely settled on. I liked when I was older and into dating and single. I kind of just liked it was the variety of partners that made it hard for me to settle down. I felt that I liked. I would just
you
think,
wanted
well,
to move on.
Well, I just thought if I settle down with this person, I'll never. If it's whatever it is, if it's a blonde or if it's breast size or whatever it is.
It doesn't sound like you got very obsessed with one person at a time, particularly.
No, I don't think so. I think maybe Agnetha a little bit, but it was very, it was all very innocent. But I was so, even as a teenager, I was so scared about sex, I think.
But she wasn't a very, like, I'm sorry to say, she was not going to be interested in you.
No.
You were very far away.
Not at that point, but, with all these, the person I liked that I went into contact with through my youth and then definitely my teenage years was Jenny Agutter.
Oh,
I was really obsessed with and who is absolutely, I just think she, and still really, to be honest, but in her prime, was just the archetypal English rose, beautiful, clever, interesting. And also Janet Ellis, I think, is similar position in that. Janet, I actually know quite well now, which is weird. But when I was about 21, I walked past Jenny Agutter in the BBC canteen and went weak at the knees. I then did a joke saying, which I think might just be in a muscle memory of all the times I'd watched American Wealth in London. But
I think it is a muscle memory. I think there is something that if somebody had a huge effect on you, there's always going to be a little bit of that, or something will come and go.
But I think she'd, at that point, she's about 14 years older than me. At that point, she'd have been in her late 30s and I'd been in my early 20s. And that could have worked.
Yeah.
And I talked to Janet Ellis. I do material about fancying Janet Ellis that she's seen.
Janet Ellis said anything?
Well, she likes it, I think. She likes that I fancied it. But she also said to me one time, if you'd met me at this point. And it could have worked. I think it might have worked. There was a point where she was gadding about town before she met her recent husband.
And how did you feel when she said that?
Well, I don't think it was, it was very unlikely to happen, but it was,
serious.
But it's sort of, it's weird. Well, I was going to go on to talk about in that one of my massive crushes I actually did.
Well,
go
we
out
need
with.
To talk about
so
this.
So we'll talk about that later, maybe. So that I'm in a really weird position where a lot of my crushes and still are my crushes now are unattainable people. That it's safe. So as a married man with kids, we'll probably talk about this later. But there's lots of people that you kind of have safe crushes on because they're characters often, you know.
Yes.
So I like the character. I like and puppets. So I like the character, not the. I wouldn't be interested in the real person. I like that. So that's a very safe. That's a very safe crush to have, and you want to have a safe crush.
But you do.
But you know, you're still going to have that. But yeah, so it's sort of weird to think, you know, with Jenny Agnes, she lived in Taunton, so I lived in Somerset. You know, it kind of there might have been a point where it could have worked. There might have been a point with Janet. If you're listening, Janet, I would still, I'm still, you know, you'd have to do it for, I'd have to ring
well,
my wife
thing,
and
yeah.
say, I have to do this, Katie. I hope you understand. You can come along and watch.
what's an appealing thought.
But the Janet Ellis one was really when I remember it. That was when I suddenly understood what all those earlier feelings were, and that was right. when I feel like I. She was in Jigsaw. This is before Blue Peter, and she played Nell Gwynn in O for
Nell
Oranges.
Gwynn's quite a thick.
She was Nell Gwynn,
well,
and it was quite, you know, she's a nice shapely lady,
yes.
and she was wearing a low cut top, and it literally was just. I think I have checked it out online subsequently, and it's not as amazing as I remember it being.
No,
even to a whatever it was, 13 or 14 year old, I was sort of that was the moment I kind of understood a bit more about what was.
And now, without getting, because you know that. Well, you possibly don't, but my husband said, are you going to have any men on or would that be disgusting? And I don't want to get too disgusting about it.
Yeah.
But, so Janet Ellis, yeah. it sounds like, yes, that was the first sexual we're talking.
Yeah.
Was there anything that wasn't sexual about it? Like, did you picture being with her? Did you picture, as in, did you think, I'd like to live in a cottage with her and have children? Or was it just a kind of... sweaty.
I don't know if it was even, you know, I don't think I could have even pictured us being together. It was just,
yeah,
I would like to be there and, you know, what. But I don't, you know, I was so innocent, like even into my 20s, really. It wasn't until my 30s that I really started to understand anything about what I was doing. If someone in my 20s, if someone made it obvious they fancied me,
yeah.
I would maybe go out with them for a bit
yeah.
or get off with them. But I was absolutely terrible. And I think because my parents had been together their whole life. My parents met when they were 13 and they're 80, mid-80s, you know, getting into their late 80s now and are still together.
Yeah.
And still, you know, in love. And
really annoyed
I think I just believed as a kid that I would meet one person. I really was romantic.
Yeah, similar
right
to me.
You know, and right until I didn't lose my virginity till I was at university, and I'd had a year off as well. So I was like, I was practically 20 when I lost my virginity, and I don't think it really even counts when the way I lost my virginity. So, and I had sex once, and then it was another year before I technically was inside someone. But not for very long, and not for the reasons you'd think. It was just sort of a weird thing. And I was, you know, but I was very, I didn't really want to grow up at all. So I wouldn't drink tea or coffee, and all the things I saw as grown up, I was very resistant to, which included sex. So I had a girlfriend from when I was 16 to 18, and she was a couple of years younger than me. And it was almost.
And had you had a crush on her?
She'd had a crush on me, I think.
Right.
So she was my friend's younger sister. And it was when I just remember, like, when she was, you know, she'd always been this kid's sister. And then I saw her walking along a lane in front of me, and so I went, ooh. And there was,
suddenly,
you know, suddenly she was becoming a woman.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, we never got anywhere near having sex. And it took a year before we were, like, even really kissing properly. You know, it was a long, all through my sixth form, basically, my friends were starting to lose their virginities. I was, like, way away from it. But I think that's the safety of that. You know, the girls I'd fancied at school before her were all kind of nearly all, you know, what didn't really have a chance with, but I would obsess over someone. You know, so those are more like.
So when you say you would obsess over them,
yeah. Well, I just
what did that involve? Like, I'm just interested in whether you, because people seem to fall into a couple of different categories here.
Yeah.
And one of them is to be very, very active in the pursuit.
Yeah.
And one is to sort of go almost completely inward.
Yeah, I
and
mean,
make
that's...
collages and learn how to write their name in special calligraphy.
I think I was pretty inward. And again, I think it was really innocent.
So you think
it was,
they didn't know?
I think they probably would have worked it out. I mean, what the first one did know, because I'll tell you about that. But I think it was very innocent, and I think I didn't really want it to go anywhere. And I think it was more about having a girlfriend who might potentially be my wife, I think, at some. So I think it was, you know, I was a very, you know, I was a silly, childish child, but I was very romantically minded because I think I thought, I assumed I would follow the footsteps of my parents.
I had a similar thing, and I felt like it was almost a hurdle to get over. And just to sort of, just fix that, and then I can get on with being a grown up and doing other things.
You know, but I think it really stultified me in terms of like being in my late teenage years and even in my 20s. You know, I can't, because obviously once that hasn't happened, then you know, then you're screwed, and then you know, and then as you know, I saw more and more people, and then you go, I went completely the other way.
Yeah, you went off the idea.
Yeah, I mean, which was good, but obviously I just wasn't ready. But the first girl I fancied, really remember fancying, like in a proper way, was Maria Barnes, who's a really good, was a really one of our group of friends, and really pretty, and very cool, and sort of slightly hippie and laid back. But she absolutely wouldn't. You know, I was very square. I was a headmaster's son, which was a big disadvantage anyway. But also, I was super square. And greasy haired, and you know, I think we had a bath once a week in those days.
You know, not it was you, like, and Maria Barnes.
No, just me. I'm sure she washed more regularly, but I would have a bath once a week, and I don't think I washed my hair when I had a bath.
I went upstairs on a bus the other day, and there was a load of teenage boys, and I nearly made an announcement. I just got this, and I was like, oh, I just want to say, oh, come on, boys, come on. This is disgusting. Because it was just fug and links.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, you need to do the bit in between. Yeah. You need to actually wash it off.
But I don't think I remember, in fact, my first girlfriend bought me some denim roll-on, like quite a long way into our relationship, and just left it on my doorstep.
The doorstep. She couldn't bear to go in because of the fog.
So you know, but Maria, you know, was lovely and still is lovely, and you know, I still know her. And she did know, but then like there was a guy. I remember going to the cinema, and I thought it was a semi-date. But there was a guy called Adam, something who came, Adam Baker, I think he was, who came up to me and said, "Oh, look, Maria fancies you. She does fancy you. Do you want me to ask you her out for you?" But it was just a horrible.
He wanted to.
Well, it was just a horrible joke. I mean, he knew that I fancied her, and so she went, "Oh no, you know, I don't."
God, they're so awful, aren't they?
And then I remember sitting with her next to her at the cinema, and I think trying to put my arm around her and her just telling me to stop, you know.
Oh God!
So she really wasn't.
The full in, stop.
She really wasn't interested. So, but maybe that was safe. And then I really fell for this girl called Fiona Pope, who, and for ages I was obsessed with her, but she had a boyfriend. But I think she must have known. I have seen her since, and I did tell her that I like had a massive crush on her. And she said, she seemed to think she didn't know, but she must have known. And I remember, you know, she did like, I think like a lot of the time these girls liked me back a bit, but I just had no way of.
Yeah, because we've talked about this a bit before, about the thing that I do feel sorry for the boys for is that they are meant to do the pursuing. You know, sort of, obviously, mainly it's awful being a girl, but but you are in that situation. It's like, well, I know I'm not supposed to be the one going and asking boys. I didn't ask anyone out, you know, till I was in my 20s, and that all went very badly. But it was just a kind of, well, I'm waiting for them. It's their job to do it. And I think, God, most of the teenage boys that I knew then would have absolutely, I mean, I think they did do it, you know, if they were, but you'd have to be really, really confident that you were going to get a yes, because who's happy just to get shot down all the time?
Exactly. And, you know, and I was, it was just painful, you know, you knew that, the humiliation was too much. And I'd experienced that humiliation of being told that I was, that she liked me and then she didn't like me.
I mean,
so you know how humiliating that is. But equally, it's just too much. And you kind of, even as a, in my 20s, again, I think, you know, what's the, if you ask someone out and they say no, it's no different than you not asking them out.
So you
might as well just get on with it. And really, in my 30s, I kind of embraced that. And I was just very much like,
Just everyone you met.
Well, I would just, if I like someone, I'd say, shall we go out? You know, or just when I did that thing where I dated 50 women in 50 days.
Yeah.
And it was just like, if anyone wants to go out for a drink, go out with them. It doesn't matter. It's one night of your life, and there were people you would meet and go, "Oh no, this isn't for me." And like after the evening was at the end of the evening, you go, "Oh no, actually, you know, you'd think this isn't my type." Just by you know, it's crazy. We just don't. If you're both single, go out and have a drink, and you'll know by the end of the night whether there's anything there. Whether it's weird. So it's, you've not lost anything. It's if you're just going to be seeing at home on your own, which I did all through my 20s. You know, I was just at home.
Yeah.
Hoping someone would ring up and say, come out for a drink, and I might meet someone in a bar. You know, it was so pathetic.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, with Fiona, I remember walking round the school with her, and it was almost like we were playing at being boyfriend and girlfriend. And she was still with her boyfriend at this point, he wasn't there. And it was there was definitely something between us, and I was we were joking about it, but I didn't push through and into the reality or ask. She went out with my, you know, one of my friends after that, so she finished with that guy, and I was with my, you know. Then I went all my sixth form time was I was going out with this girl who wasn't in the sixth form, so I was sort of slightly pushed away from my friends, but also they were all having slightly more adult times, and I was having this incredibly innocent relationship. Weirdly, I've kind of sort of remembered, I keep on waking up in the middle of the night thinking this girl who was in my sixth form English class, and I haven't thought, and she went out with another one of my friends.
And did you have a crush on her?
Well, I realised I did, but I wake up in the night and I haven't thought about it for like 30 years or whatever, is it 40 years, nearly? Yeah. And she wasn't at all, you know, important. We didn't get anywhere near being with each other. We sat like this opposite each other in English because it was the teachers at one end, and so we just were literally opposite each other, and we just looked at each other a lot, and, you know, I really liked her, but I had a girlfriend and she had a boyfriend. And but I think because she was
Why are you waking up in
the night? I don't know, because I think she was so... I think partly because I haven't seen her for all that time.
Yeah.
So part of the thing that makes me wake up feeling terrible is that she's now 55 and I can't imagine it.
Think about how old Agnes is.
Exactly.
A hologram now, she's so old.
But I am as well, but I haven't seen her in the interim. But also she had the most kind of 80s haircut.
Yeah.
Right. So, like that kind of the haircut that all the 80s girls had. And I just think for some reason, she just exemplifies the lost opportunities of youth,
wow.
I think. Because it's not really to do with her. I think also my friend went out with her and they did have sex. And so maybe there's a part of me thinking, maybe it's about me regretting that I wasn't having sex in the sixth form with nice, sexy girls.
Yeah. During lockdown, not normal people came out during lockdown. Did you watch Normal People?
No.
Well, it's very much about, you know, it's a lot of teenage longing, and it's really, really good. But people got obsessed with it,
right?
And I was also obsessed with it, and I was starting to have weird dreams and stuff. And in fact, I had a Zoom call with my sisters, and I thought about the first boy that broke my heart. We had a brief conversation about him, not even about the bad bits of that situation, but something made me feel rejected and hurt, and I got off the Zoom call and burst into tears.
Yeah,
my poor patient husband come and just sort of pat me on the shoulder. We were both really laughing as well.
Yeah.
But I was suddenly right back there. And Normal People, it's very much filmed like you're in their lives as well. But I feel like something about that, like everything stopping.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of reflection and a lot of people thinking about all the times that all the opportunities they'd missed, basically, because none of us had any opportunities to do anything, to live our lives at all.
Yeah.
So we were all just thinking about that a lot. It's interesting that you've come to the conclusion that it is some sort of emblem.
Yeah, but I think also the passage of time is crazy. I've really had an idea about a novel or something about this, but it's very in the early days, and it's just sort of that's partly one of the things that kind of, you know, sort of wanting to go back. But I regret that. I mean, it was the right thing to do for me, I think. But I sort of regret that I was this sort of prissy little, you know, just childish. You know, anyone having sex with me, even like of the same age of me, I feel like it would have been sort of child abuse anyway, because I was sort of so naive, you know. But I sort of wish. I mean, in university, I'd sort of got a little bit better. Maybe in the third year of university, I had, four or five girlfriends over that time. But it was like, you know, it wasn't. You know, I should have got all that stuff out the way early.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ready. So in a way, it's not. But
you've covered a lot, though. I mean, you've done all right.
I've made up for it, but I think it. But I also, you know, I don't regret it because I really love the life I've got now, and you need to have gone through all that stuff. And and I wouldn't have the kids I have now. I might have different.
We're all thinking.
You know, we'd have different kids. It's sort of a weird thing. You just would have different kids who you would all equally love who've not turned up. But I think I needed to get to. You know, I think by the time I was 40, I was sort of okay. Yeah, now
I think it is hard to look back on the person you were as well.
Yeah.
You and I have something in common.
Okay.
That I made a shrine. but my shrine stayed in my kitchen at university, and yours was on national television.
It was, yes.
It was on Fist of Fun.
Yeah.
And it was a shrine devoted to Julia Sawala. Do you want to tell us about that?
I really... when we moved to London in the early 90s, there was a TV show called Press Gang on that people...
I based my haircut really wrongly on Linda Day's haircut. Like, it looked terrible, but I loved her so much. I kept that haircut.
And
it's all, you know, late 20s.
You know, it was a brilliant... It was a kid's show, really, but and I was an adult by that stage, but it was a very funny show. Yeah, it was written by Stephen Moffat, who went on to do Doctor Who and everything, Sherlock. It was a really brilliant show, and it had Linda Day, this fantastic character, played by Julia Swiler, absolutely gorgeous actress, but very funny. And, and again, I sort of had a crush on the character of Linda Day, as it sounds like you probably had a crush on the character of Linda Day. I didn't really. Dexter Fletcher was I didn't like as much because he was with her, and he was actually with her as well. And so it became like it was a joke, as a lot of the stuff I do is, it's an exaggeration of the truth. And it's, and so we played around with that fixation. But I really fancied Julia. And
close was it to the real...
I mean, it was pretty,
You were fixated.
I really liked her.
You'd never cut any pictures out of her?
No, so I didn't have a well that... with pictures of her and pictures
Who can afford a well, Richard?
But then it all kind of bounces back on me, like in a weird way. So it was sort of, again, a safe thing, and it was fancying a character, really, rather than a person.
And you were a character.
Yeah, and
as
I was playing a much more kind of, again, a very, both those characters were sort of extensions and exaggerations of the teenage us. Really.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, so I watched this last night.
And right.
It's really, really funny. But I was thinking, part of the reason it's really funny is your character is this sort of weird little baby man, you know, because I was thinking there's so many characters that if they did that, it would just be horrible.
Yeah,
it's just horrible to have fixation that you're, you know,
well, because it's a real person
them and putting, you know, pictures all over.
Yeah, it's a real person. So it is I think a lot of the things we did in Fist of Fun, I'd look back and go, okay, you know, that we picked on a little boy called Maurice Michener, and who'd been as scared of Peter Pan. And we did a sketch about him, and I think I wouldn't have done that again in hindsight, because it was a real person.
Right.
And I think it did slightly, even though we weren't successful, but I think it slightly haunted him through his life where people recognise the name.
Yeah.
Because the people who liked it really liked the show,
yeah.
but it was still quite a cultish underground show. And so it's a real thing. It was based on a bit of reality. We took it too, so it was almost Silence of the Lambs or whatever. But yeah, because it was such an innocent...
were very not threatening.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's what comedy is a weird thing. Like, I'm interviewing Cunt from Cunt of the Gang in a minute, and the stuff he says is appalling, but his character is so weak and sort of pathetic that it's sort of all right, the terrible things he says. And there's also a sort of very nice undercurrent of a nice person underneath it all as well. And I think this is similar with this. And it was a joke on myself, and it was about male ineffectuality, really, rather than anything to do with Julia. But, I remember going to a party and Julia was there with Dexter Fletcher.
Was she with him?
Yeah, they went out for a while. She once called me Dexter Fletcher.
Oh.
We'll get to that later. So they were sort of together in reality, and they were at a party, and he looked at me across the bar, and I thought, oh, he's recognised me, but he didn't say anything, and I was thinking, no, whatever. And so then, we did this, and I did it again. I did that sketch again with Andrea Kaur as well.
Oh, right.
So when we went, we did almost the same thing again, but it moved on a bit, and I was now interested in Andrea Kaur.
You weren't with Julia at that
No, point. So I wasn't with Julia.
Okay.
So just after we'd finished in the Lee and Herring stuff, I'd written a play called Excavating Rita, which we were trying to get on in the West End. And so we were going to do like a rehearsed reading of it. And I really not only fancied Julia, but also thought she was and is an amazing actor.
She is,
and
yeah.
really fantastic at comedy. And so I kind of, they said, who do you want to try and get for this? And I said, can we try and get Julia Sawala for it? Because I thought she'd be amazing. And I didn't think she'd say yes. She said that when the script arrived, the guy on it was delivered on a bike, and the guy in the bike came right up into the house. I mean, because she lived actually in Linda Bellingham's attic. But he came, rather than just coming to the door, she was in another show.
Yes, I know. She
moved in with Linda Bellingham.
World,
but the guy with the script came right into her room, right? Didn't just drop it.
God.
So he came right upstairs, and she sort of felt like this was some, she felt like this was some sign of something, this kind of weird way she got. It was like the script had to get right to her rather than just be left on the doorstep.
I would be calling the police.
Yes, never happened. So really weird. So we did this. we did. She came and did the, we did 2 days rehearsal.
Yeah.
And did the reading for, nothing happened with the play. And then we went for a drink, all of us together afterwards. We'd had a nice time. And I was thinking, she must know. And she's not saying anything about it. Because you'd think if you were on BBC Two, if someone there was a show on BBC Two, someone would have said, have you seen this show?
Absolutely.
Probably avoid that guy. He ever sends you a script and sends a man into your house to give it to you. And so...
Was it you?
It wasn't me. Okay. So Paul Putner, who was there, he was fantastic. Sort of, he was always the one to broach a subject. You know, he's great because if he's with the star, he'll ask the question that you're not meant to ask and get the stories because he's so likable. But he said, so, Julia, did you ever see the sketch with Richard did about you on Fist of Fun? And she went white. And she said, what? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And then she was like, I knew you'd all been laughing at me all this time and I didn't know why.
Oh, no.
And she stormed off to the toilet and I went, oh, God, this is terrible. This is the worst. And she came back from the toilet and she said, look, I'm sorry that I flew off the handle there, but it was just, very upsetting. And part of the reason that I'm upset is because, I really fancy you and this is...
Oh, my God. What did you think then?
It was really weird.
Because I would be looking for hidden cameras. I would just be like, what? No, nothing works this well, ever.
The whole thing was so weird. Partly I was the other girl in the play was like my ex-girlfriend who I'd really been in love with and had moved on, and I was sort of hoping to rekindle things with her. So I had
It
was just like really, it was really weird. And I'd sort of said to her, is there any way we're going to get back together? And she said, no, there's no way we're going to get back together. So we sort of, Julia, I think we took a cab home and had a snog, and then she had to go off because she was going to Dubai the next day. But then we rang each other every night from when she was in Dubai, and we had these really long conversations. And it was really surreal. And Stuart was in Australia at the time. And I emailed him and said, I think I'm going out with Julia Swallow. And he just genuinely thought I'd gone mad.
Yeah, yeah, you would be really worried about I'm coming back, and don't worry.
So
stay where you are.
So, yeah,
we'll
so I went, so I had a crush on someone and went out with them we went out for 18 months.
There must have been times where you were looking at her and thinking, oh my God, that's Julia Swallow
Certainly to begin with, and certainly like the first time we were making out. That was just like, this is just too strange. It was all kind of weird. And then the people who wrote the Linda Bellingham sitcom, when we first met them in a pub, they took her to one side and said, do you know who that guy is? So people kind of,
really
it was sort of weird.
Everywhere you went.
It was weird.
People
weird
were taking her aside and saying, you do know who that is.
But then I kept, I wouldn't let her watch. I kept on pretending I didn't have tapes of the sketch because I didn't want to see it. It was before YouTube, so you couldn't watch it. And then the first
time. Did she want to?
Yeah. So the first time she came back to me, my dad, my mum and dad, she came in and more or less the first thing she said is, have you got any copies of the Fist of Fun? And my dad was, yeah, of course I have.
Oh, my God.
And then we had to sit down and watch it together with my mum, my dad and Julia. And in the show, that episode that she's first in, my dad is a character my dad's in a jar. He's the jarred man of Somerset. And the sketch starts with me with my dad going, dad, meet Julia, and me pointing at a picture of Julia. Julia, meet my dad, which has literally just happened in reality. And then I'm sort of dancing around dressed as Julia, wearing night vision goggles and all this sort of stuff. It was miles into the series before it happened. I thought it happened every week, and there's only a couple of times it's in.
Yeah.
But it's just like we all watched this together, and then there was a sort of pause, and my dad said, well, that was a bit embarrassing. But the fact, there was lots of great stuff about it. But I think it was very hard to get over that initial, the weirdness of it. And also that you're not, when you have that fantasy of being with someone, it's the fantasy of it. The reality of it is never going to.
Yeah, because even if it's not a character.
Yeah.
It's not the real person. You've filled in a lot of gaps yourself before, however much you've imagined. Yeah. That's just from your head. You've written them as a character. So So you were in the vanguard of the whole comedy is the new rock and roll.
Yes,
thing. So
very much so.
You were, like, you and Stu were pin-ups, basically. Sort of. I mean, you're wincing. but presumably you did have... I mean, I know of a couple of people in comedy who sent you letters.
Yes.
And probably locks of their hair and whatever. Did you... How much responsibility did you feel?
I mean, a lot, really. It was, you know, it was... So it wasn't... You know, it was weird, and it was a weird because it was in the interim, I guess, between the 70s and 80s, where just everyone got on with whatever they wanted to do, regardless, and a time when we were getting to be nice people, and I think me and Stu were nicer people, so we felt very avuncular towards the girls who were interested in us at the time. Were, you know, 15 or 16, mm-hmm. and you'd say that to men at the time, and they go, yeah, so.
Oh, I'm not surprised, but I am really.
But everyone, but it, there was a, but it was a really different time. It was like, so what? Yeah, go for it.
Oh yeah, well,
I'm sure it would be to an extent still a little bit nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But it just felt like, you know, they were very. It felt like most of them were really vulnerable, and the kind of the girls that would follow you around a little bit. And it was very minor. Newman and Medeal had kind of done the whole, you know, Wembley stuff, and had, you know, it felt like had proper kind of fans of that kind. And the stand up circuit did a bit, and we had a sort of ragbag of intellectual boys and girls, and, you know, teenagers and young adults who loved comedy and liked us because we were a bit smart. And so, yeah, like one of them's my wife's best friend who comes and stays at our house now and is still like a little bit of a fangirl, but is, you know, it's really weird. I remembered her. She became a stand-up comedian, and I remembered her because she would write to us 3 times a week, and we would try and write back to everyone.
Did you?
Yeah, so we didn't write back 3 times a week, but I liked her from the letters, there was a lot of them, and not necessarily her, but there were a lot of them where, and maybe her a little bit as well, to be fair, but where it was slightly sort of troubled people. It wasn't like, I remember, like, a guy from Scotland wrote to me. I don't know how old he was. He was an older man, telling me how much he fancied me and stuff. And because he was gay, I sort of went, "Oh, you know, that's great. You know, that's thanks very much." And then he would send me a slightly inappropriate letter back because I sort of encouraged him because I was trying to be nice and right on. And so, like, he was getting a bit overexcited. But mostly, it was. I mean, there was fan fiction about us and stuff like that. So that we had.
Did they send fan fiction?
No, but you'd find out about it. We had some real sort of hardcore fans who did fanzines, and they would often send us stuff from other fanzines and things where, you know, people were imagining people had dressed up, girls had dressed up as us and then started kissing each other, you know. But again, it was all, it just felt, you know, it felt like these are children to me.
Yeah.
You know, we did Top of the Pops, we presented Top of the Pops, and I just can't understand how anyone could be in that environment and find it sexy, because it was just stinking, screaming children. And you think, what, you know, just the technicality of the hard work it would be to get through all of this. It would be enough, but it was just nothing sexy about it, you know. So, I mean, obviously they were paedophiles and disgusting but it just wasn't, you know, that it was exciting being among the pop stars and stuff, but it wasn't exciting being amongst the children who'd come to see it.
I have to say it's a real relief to hear you saying that, because you sort of think, I don't know, and it was a different time, but, you know, you hear it was a different time so much that you think... was anyone sort of recognising that it wasn't maybe a great thing to exploit these?
I mean, no, it's difficult, and if girls are throwing themselves at it's a difficult thing. But I also don't think I really liked that either. It felt like, I'm not saying we never never on tour there weren't some young women on tour, but it certainly wasn't a lot. And also, just Stu especially was very puritanical about it, at least claimed to be. And so it wasn't like it was almost frowned upon to, you know, go and talk to people. We'd always meet people and sign and stuff after the shows, but it wasn't like the kind of atmosphere is where we were goading each other on to make the most of what was happening. But also, it was sort of mainly an innocent thing anyway, I think, on both sides. So it would have felt, and we, I think, because we would both been fans of stuff,
Yeah.
I think we just like really appreciated the people who were fans of it. And
that's
the idea of stepping over that line would just be so strange.
Yeah.
And wrong. But it is pretty nice if someone fancies you. And
it's
I think
really
that's
nice.
Why. So if you know, if Julia Sawala can be flattered by me fancying, you
yeah.
know, I mean, that's it's sort of, you know, and Janet Ellis is sort of flattered by my sort of ridiculously rude routines about her, you know, it is obviously nice if you know, but again, I think like with fans, it's sort of like this is, you know, that's why it was weird with Julia, because you know I was a fan of hers, and you've already started on an unequal footing, and unless
yeah.
you'd have to really want. I'm not saying that Julia's like this with me, but if you were sort of started dating your fans, it's sort of like. You know, it's not an even place to start. Sleeping with people is maybe a different thing, but it's still a big. I think we were conscious. We just thought it was a, you know, even if someone was older and sexy, you'd go, but what if they sell their story to the
yeah.
papers, or what if they turn out to be crazy? Because so many people just turned out to be crazy
yeah.
that you just, and so people would get obsessed with you and then get really cross with you. You know, that's what
yeah.
fandom's like. So they'd love
right.
you and then they'd hate you, which again, I think you sort of see now more on Twitter and stuff like that, that people really get into you and then you don't really even do anything wrong, but they decide that they,
you've
you know,
done something wrong.
Because that crush thing is that, you know, I love them. Oh, no. And then they're not what I thought. And then,
yeah.
and then they hate you.
Yeah.
And that's.
So you feel like you've let them down
they feel like so it's just such
just
a
existing
such a minefield to get into really with all of that, so it was, and I just didn't feel, I felt like Stu was the attractive one, like in fact someone said they met someone at a, they said, oh, I met Richard Herring in Soho and told him I thought he was the good looking one out of Lee and Herring, and I said, yeah, I think I know who that was, and that was 1995. So that was how I said, yeah, she was a barmaid and she worked in this pub and I had a snog with her, and that was, yeah. And so like I was able to pin down the one person in the 1990s who thought I was sexy. And I remember Victoria Corrin came up to me and said, what's it like being the ugly one in Lee and Herring? And I think, having talked to her, she was sort of trying to flirt with me a bit.
Yeah,
but I just went...
But you're not going to...
I think I just cried and went home, basically.
I really love the fact that was her, because that's a really good example of someone... You're totally right. That's clearly a flirty
yeah.
line, but also it's horrible and
yeah.
it's not going to work.
I was so bad at spotting. I was, you know... We met Moon Unit Zappa in Montreal in 1997. We interviewed her and I was just doing... I did my sort of... Stu would be the more straight man in the interviews and I would just say the things you weren't meant to say, and I didn't know Frank Zappa had died actually, and
God.
I was being rude about Frank Zappa, and she loved it, she was really laughing. And then I was sitting in the bar, she came up to me and said, write this down, I'm going to write something down, and she gave me her phone number, and if you watch the interview it's clearly she really likes me.
Yeah.
And she gave me her phone number and I didn't even realise that was, you know, I went, okay, there, if you're ever in Los Angeles come and see me, go, well, I'm not ever going to be in Los Angeles. And you kind of think, I didn't even, or it was, if you look back at the interview, you just go, she obviously fancied you.
Yeah.
She gave you a phone number.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I still didn't realise. So I was so, if unless somebody just went, I really fancy you and I want to come to bed with you and
yeah.
have sex with you,
yeah.
then, you know, and...
And you, then you would just about
then I'd be okay.
It.
And then I go, okay, this is good. And it is a validation. It's sort of like you think, oh, great, this, you know, someone does like me. So I think I was sort of very insecure about all of those things. I was very naive still. I'm sure I made, you know, I made tons of mistakes and did loads of stupid things. But I, you know, it was, yeah, I don't think... you know, it was. I was just. My memory of my 20s is just being in my flat on my own, most playing Civilization, because I was, you know. So being on TV, I was just mostly. If we weren't on tour, if we weren't working, I was just at home and not knowing what to do to even see my friends. Really, I was too shy. You know,
yeah.
I was. I didn't want to impose on people. I saw so many people imposing on people in situations and thinking, I don't want to be that guy who's the guy coming up and. No, it doesn't realise that no one wants him in the conversation. And so I was very... But, I, you know, it took me... I mean, I don't think I'm over that. Things like The Fringe, I would just be overwhelmed by being on my own and I have to run away because I was scared. You know, I didn't want to impose myself. I was... The minute you're on TV, you're conscious, everyone's looking at you thinking, what's that guy doing
oh,
on his
yeah.
own?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I just felt... And I didn't feel like part of the comedy circuit for lots of reasons. properly. And, you know, just so my 20s were just horrible. I just remember just feeling, you know, it was sort of, you know, if I wasn't dating someone, I just, you know, I was sort of just on my own most of the time. And so you'd think that would be the golden time of dating and blah de blah and whatever.
I think a lot of people feel that they did their 20s wrong.
Yeah. But it was, you know, my 30s, ironically, was, you know, but I used to joke about whether in my 30s there was not all these girls in their mid-20s who were sort of interested in me. And I don't think many of them were because I've been on TV. But you go, you know, some of these girls watched me on Fist of Fun when they were 14 and they're now 25. Was I grooming? Did I sort of groom those girls? Was I grooming them?
and now
I'm going out with them. So, like, you know, obviously it's different, but it was, even that was sort of weird. But I think I'm glad we didn't get super famous, and I think I felt much more comfortable in my 30s because I felt like the people I was going out with weren't going out with me because of who I was, because I wasn't really anybody. But I just became, you know, I became much more comfortable and confident in terms of dating from about 30, you know, between 35 and 40, I finally kind of twigged
what it took
and also had confidence in myself and felt like I was attractive. And I think I was a bit more attractive.
but weirdly, confidence is...
Yeah, but it was confidence. And literally, I went through a period where pretty much everyone I was interested in was interested back. You know, it was just like insane.
Well, lucky that
isn't,
you.
That isn't the show. But it was when I was 30. When I was 38.
Yeah, ruined this
when I was
show.
38, I had a, you know, I had a, basically everyone I met was into me. Because I think because I was happy and I was confident and
I mean, we're going to have to finish it there, aren't we?
I haven't talked about all my crushes of people on children's TV and puppets and stuff.
No, you haven't.
But I mean, there we go.
Have you got... is it Jenny Agutter? What's your big crush? When I say to you...
I mean, I think maybe Janet Ellis is the...
Janet Ellis.
I think maybe Janet Ellis. I mean, Janet or Jenny, I think, are the lifelong...
Well, we'll do Janet since she's clearly up for it as well. So do you know about this love maths?
Oh,
were you ever aware of it when you were at school?
I vaguely remember, yeah. I know it's a load of nonsense. Go on.
What? It's scientific proof. Okay. L, no O's, no V's, three E's, one S. It's all right. It's 61%.
Okay.
So that's a 2-1.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, there's an age gap there for us.
There's an age gap, but as
okay.
our friend Danielle Ward says, after you're 40, all bets are off. So you have to track her down. I'm very sorry for your wife.
Yeah.
We'll get her on, though, and maybe we can match her.
Was I meant to say my wife was the most important woman in my life?
No.
Did I make a mistake there?
I didn't say who's the most important person. But biggest crush.
Yeah, well, I had a big crush on her. And then,
did you?
And then,
that's a nice story. Was that... you were later.
Well, because I met her and really there was... We did a gig together, and then we didn't see her again for about 10 months. But there was just something, and I really liked her set. And then she was standing beside me, and I really liked her standing beside me. And then I looked around, and she'd gone, and she hadn't said goodbye or anything. And I just remember feeling really disappointed, and I think I sort of messaged her on social media, and she said she was married on social media, but she did that to just, you know, keep
randy
men
like
away. And then she said she was going to come to Edinburgh and see my show, and I was really excited about it. Like ridiculous, because I'd spent this and then I thought I saw her coming in. And I thought, oh God, this is great, but she didn't come to the show. So, but I was obviously like really into her. And then, I mean, I've written about this in my book, and it's a long story. But her boyfriend asked me to come and speak at his university, but I kind of only did it because I wanted to see her again.
Word.
And he only asked me because he knew I was friendly with Katie. So, you know, it was complicated, but
the tone of this episode is so different from almost all the other episodes.
But it's, you know, is that every relationship has to destroy something before it, doesn't it?
Well, on that lovely note, I'll say thank you very much, Richard Herring.
Thank you.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe, as it helps people find where we are.